Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Good afternoon, listeners and new listeners, and we have lots of new listeners every week, it appears from the reports, and that's great. Thank you for telling your friends about the show. I appreciate it. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio, broadcasting to you at a KGAB AM 650 on your dial, Cheyenne, Wyoming, and its affiliates, and the EBN network, webtalkradio.net. So, last show, we ended up, the show previously, we talked about an amazing document talking about internment camps, definitely oriented to displaced civilians, PSYOPs officers who were going to be charged with taking care of antagonistic attitudes and political activists, and also helping people better understand and appreciate the government's policies. That's right out of the document. I read it on that show, or I read excerpts of it on that show, and you can certainly go back and check the archives. And then last week we talked about the tidal wave of executive orders that Barry, our great president, is signing, and all of them rather frightening. And we've only gotten through a few. We got through kind of the, shall we say, the land grab executive order, which has been enhanced recently by Barry and the Democrats, and implemented, in fact, by Bill Clinton in his last days in office with 377,000 acres grabbed by the federal government, and millions of acres, 13 million acres, actually, proposed by Barry to be grabbed by the federal government. By the federal agencies, and kind of in comport with Agenda 21, because the map of what we want to claim, how about what the minions that run the country want to claim as heritage sites and wildlife preserves and all sorts of other good things, kind of mimics the map that the Agenda 21 folks did at the United Nations for World Heritage Sites and Biosphere Sites. It's an amazing coincidence. Anyway, we also talked about, we got about halfway through, actually, this amazing, really amazing executive order. Where is our Congress? Hello? Knock, knock. Is there anybody home there on Capitol Hill? You guys are letting him get away with this? I mean, what is the problem? Do we have any cojones out there, folks? I mean, this stuff is so blatantly anti-constitutional. It is so inherently dangerous. And we actually have some Republicans voting for some of this stuff, like the suspension of habeas corpus. You know, that was in the National Defense Act. That was passed and had a lot of Republicans voting for it. John McCain voted for it. And basically that said, look, if we have a suspicion, we can lock you up, throw away the key, and you don't get your one phone call. I'm not exaggerating. That was it. It was struck down by a federal judge. We're going to talk about that a little bit today. In fact, today what we're going to do is we're going to finish up this executive order stuff, which ties into the previous two shows, and then I'm going to give you some examples of a president and an administration, along with his Democratic, called progressive, spelled communist, hierarchy in Congress and behind the scenes. Thank you, George Soros. They're getting worried. You know, even with the tampering with the polls by the liberal elite media and the liberal pollsters, his ship is kind of sinking, and they don't like it. I mean, these people want to hold on to power at all costs. They have worked since Woodrow Wilson, almost 100 years ago, folks. to put in place the shadow government, the mechanisms, shall we say, for the conversion of this country from a constitutional republic. And I talked about this in the last few shows. In fact, the whistleblower at DHS called Rosebud, that's been reported in the Canadian Free Press, and I think there's another article coming out in the next 2 weeks, clearly states and quotes people at the Department of Homeland Security and in the Obama administration as saying they want to get rid of a constitutional republic, which ties into the shows I did months ago on the czars, right? The shadow government that Obama has set up. Once again, where are the Republicans? Where is the Congress on this stuff? I mean, look, when you give up a power in a branch of government, when you allow another branch to tip the balances that were so carefully contrived by the founding fathers to balance the judiciary with the legislative, with the executive, that's a power you're not going to regain. You know, one right lost is all rights eroded. Anyway, we're going to go from the protective orders, that's a Freudian slip. We need a protective order from this guy. From the executive orders of Mr. Obama and crew, and then we're going to launch into what this guy has been saying over the last month as his election plight, shall we say, becomes evident even to his narcissistic viewpoint and to the elite, out-of-touch viewpoint of his advisors, none of whom are realists, businessmen, or capitalists. And you will just pucker when you hear some of this. And I'll tell you, when we get into it, why the press is not picking up on these outright, blatant, flat-out, incorrect lies it's unfathomable. I mean, even some of the more conservative outlets are not challenging some of his numbers, and his numbers are flat wrong. 2 + 2 does not equal 5. It does not equal 3. It equals 4. I will show you that in the second segment of the show, and then we're going to finish up the show. We're going to finish up the show with, I want to give you an opposite viewpoint. You know, my viewpoint is that when you print lots of money, you have more dollars in circulation, and the more dollars you have, the less each dollar is worth, and that's called inflation. It's not the increase in value of goods and services. It is the decrease in value of the purchasing agent, and it's a huge risk. Every time we print money, either on the sheet or off the sheet, because the Fed likes to hide stuff off the sheet, and Europe prints money to bail their butts out over there, and we'll be talking about that today, again, because it all ties in to this second segment of the show today, and ties into this entire, shall we say, plate of less than pleasant news I have handed you over the last 4 or 5 weeks. When you do that, you devalue a currency. And we talked about in a previous show, I believe it was 4 weeks ago or 5 weeks ago, how that devaluation is part of the plan that these folks have to remove the dollar as reserve currency of the world. Now, you know, a report came out saying that Americans had lost 40% of their net worth and 8% of their earnings power between 2007 and December 31, 2010, those 3 years. I mean, the recession started, although most folks don't know it. I happen to know it because I was in the middle of a ranch deal at this time when things kind of cratered at the end of 2007. And I can tell you, it was unbelievable. The lenders couldn't fund. It was amazing. And you didn't hear anything about it in the press. But it was the first big red flag that I saw. And then in 2008, it became kind of common knowledge. And obviously at the end of 2008, well, it was a wreck. So part of this happened on George Bush's watch. Now, it happened because of government policies rammed through by a Democratic Congress. But put that to the side. A huge reduction in the net worth of Americans, $7 trillion. That's $7 trillion. That is almost half of our national debt, the primary national debt, and that is more than half of our annual GDP. And an 8% decrease in earnings, I believe the figures are an average family went from $49,000 to $45,000. Those are not good statistics. And you know what? They do not include 2011 and 2012 year-to-date, and I guarantee you that those numbers will be higher when those years are included. I flat guarantee you. You cannot have an increase in 4 million people in poverty, 7 million people on the government dole, including welfare and food stamps, and 21 million people out of work, which is an addition of 4 million people since the end of 2010, and not have those numbers go down. But this all ties in. This all ties in. I'm wandering a little bit from these executive orders, and I'm going to rein myself back in, and we're going to follow the outline of this show, because at the end, I'm going to give you an alternate opinion from a guy by the name of David Goldman, who's pretty well respected, and his idea is that it's not going to be inflationary. The wreck that's coming is going to be deflationary. And listen, I disagree with him, but you need to hear his opinion. The guy's good. He's in the minority, but the minority can be right. And we're going to end the show. I hope we're going to have enough time, because I always seem to run out of time. We're going to end the show with some truisms about socialism and capitalism, which I think will make you smile and nod your head in agreement. And next week, we're going to be talking about if my pro-gun guy, one of the tops in the nation, has agreed to the interview. I told you guys about this about 3 weeks ago. I set the stage then for what's happening in the anti-gun environment and mentality of Obama's White House and czars, and some of the little things that they've done to kind of undermine things behind the scenes. But my anti-gun guy, not my anti-gun guy, but the anti-gun guy, he's not real keen on coming on this show with me and the pro-gun guy. You would think that with all the spouting that they're talking about how this president is such a supporter of the Second Amendment, that he would eagerly come on this show and talk to 100,000 people and tell them how good it is, how our Second Amendment rights are inviolate, how our guns are safe, how there won't be any games with ammunition. That was all a mistake at the beginning of this president's term. But so far, he has found excuses not to do it. Anyway, I'm hoping to pull that together for you for next week, and we shall see. Time tells all tales. Now, let's finish this National Defense Executive Order. Where we left off on our continuing saga of Barry Run Amok is the Labor Department could press you into free service in the event of a national emergency, and their programming, according to this executive order, which was signed just a few months ago, they're programming exactly what you do. That's right, Big Brother is figuring out what your worth to society is, how important your job is to the national defense. And if it's important enough, poof, you get whisked away in the night, and you get to work in a government whatever, and you get to work for free. I'm not making this up. You can go and check this executive order for yourself. Oh, and then I'm going to quote to you. This is section 3D of part 1 of the order. Yes. The Secretary of Commerce, in cooperation with the Secretary of Defense and the Secretary of Homeland Security, boy, that Homeland Security is in this order a lot, and other agencies shall, number one, analyze the potential effects of national emergencies on actual production capability, taking into account the entire production system, including shortages of resources, and develop recommended preparedness measures to strengthen capabilities for production increases in national emergencies. Remember last week we talked about what a national emergency is, according to this order? It's the Secretary of Homeland Security, Janet Neapolitano. Excuse me. Janet, she makes me cough. Janet Neapolitano sitting down at her desk. I assume she can fit between the chair and the desk. And writing a paragraph saying, I think there might be a potential threat out there, and therefore we're invoking this order. I'm not making this up. It's right here in this order. So this gal, and I don't know what you guys think of her, but, you know, I wouldn't trust her to boil a cup of tea for me. This gal can kind of throw this whole country into martial law with one paragraph. The Congress doesn't get to see it. The Congress doesn't get to vote on it. And, you know, I don't know. Maybe they don't have enough spine to do it anyway. And off we go. Oh, yeah. You betcha. And then that would perform, I'm quoting again, perform industry analysis to assess capabilities of the industrial base to support the national defense. And develop policy recommendations to improve the international competitiveness. Boy, there's that global thing again. Of specific domestic industries and their abilities to meet national defense program needs. Yeah. Okay. And that would include the Secretary of Agriculture with respect to food resources, food resource facilities, livestock resources, veterinary resources, plant health resources, and the domestic distribution of farm equipment and commercial fertilizer. The Secretary of Energy, as to all forms of energy, that's going to tie into this next executive order. Wait till you hear this. I know you haven't heard it before. I know you haven't heard it before. The Secretary and Health of Human Services, respect to health, and I can go on and on. You can listen to my show last week and get a complete rundown. Basically, this order allows the government to take over everything. Okay? I'll just sum it up for you. From your health, to your food, to your water, to your job. And all it takes is a paragraph saying that she thinks there's a potential threat. Not wartime, not actual threat, not actual disaster, just Janet Neapolitano writing one paragraph saying, I think there's a potential threat. And all this machinery goes into motion. Wow. Which brings us to the next executive order. Remember we just talked about energy? Oh, yes, energy. Well, here we go. This is an executive order supporting the safe and responsible development of unconventional domestic natural gas resources. Yeah, this is pretty recent, folks. Now, you know, everybody's been talking about how we have all this natural gas and we have oil reserves out the yin-yang, and the president has stood up there and lied to us, and repeatedly, that we only have 2% of the world's oil reserves but use 20% of the world's oil. Nonsense. We don't use 20% of the world's oil. It's far less than that. And we have about 50% of the world's oil reserves, according to the president's own government study. I mean, this guy goes out and lies to you in the face of his own government's studies. And the government studies are one-half to one-third of the private industry estimates of our oil and natural gas reserves. So you would think that this is a big feather in our cap, right? This can make America strong. We know the story of the Dakotas. They're rocking and rolling up there. You can hardly find a place to live. Unemployment's 3.2%. Wages are through the roof. This is all good stuff, right? I guess not. Not according to this executive order, because in the policy part of it, it says natural gas provided 25% of the energy consumed in the United States. Well, that, at least that's a realization that, you know, natural gas plays an important role. Now, then it goes on to say, it is vital we take full advantage of our natural gas resources while giving American families and communities confidence, and here comes the rub, that natural and cultural resources, air and water quality, and public health and safety will not be compromised. And pray tell, that's a quote. Now I'm off the quote. And pray tell, who do you think's going to decide that? Oh boy. When we come back, I'll tell you, because I bet you can never guess.
Land, for love and money. The beauty of the land provokes something primal.
fills us with awe and makes us yearn for land of our own. My land. Those words evoke a sense of security and a place in the world. Yet the word land also evokes nitty-gritty financial issues. Business, improvement, tax, profit. It is love and money. In Volume 1 of Land for Love and Money, releasing June 26th, rancher Reed Lance Rosenthal uses his award-winning style to tell us real stories, the hard-hitting truth your banker forgot to tell you, about land of any type, size, or location. For those who are drawn to land purchase, ownership, management, preservation, and sale in good times and in bad, Reed is uniquely qualified to write Land for Love and Money, given his intense love of the land, his fourth-generation land heritage, and his devotion to wild and remote places, as well as his extensive $1.5 billion experience with the purchase, sale, management, and preservation and enjoyment of all types and sizes of land throughout North and South America. Hear the stories of success, failure, and lessons learned from the ground up. Land for Love and Money, to be released June 26th.
Yeah, the release for Land for Love and Money is just, what is it, 8 days away, 9 days away now? Tuesday, June 26th, put that down your calendars. We're going to have some really fun stuff going on that day. And if you want to kind of take a preview, you can go take a look at the website, which my folks and the publishers have been working on. They've really done a great job. It's not quite done yet, but it's far enough along that I think you'll really enjoy it. There's some great media tidbits of interviews of me on various radio and TV shows. And anyway, I think you'll like it a lot. It's www.landforloveandmoney.com. That's landforloveandmoney.com. Take a look at it. Drop me an email. Tell me what you think. We're open for suggestions. Don't be bashful. Now, back to our pending question. Who do you think's going to decide on this tremendous asset that only the United States in reality has, that gives us a competitive edge against the whole world, that could lower our energy costs and pump $1 trillion more into this economy that currently we send overseas or take out of the pockets of private enterprise simply to run our cars? Who do you think's going to make that determination as to whether it's good for air, water, culture, public health, and safety? You got it. It's the president and his cabinet and his czars. Sorry, Congress, you don't have a say in this. But Janet Neapolitano does. Boy, that's a thread that runs through this whole thing. Anyway, let's go down to the Interagency Working Group to Support Safe. I'm reading out of the document. I'm not making this up, folks. This is not a horror show. It's reality. Interagency Working Group to Support Safe and Responsible Development of Unconventional Domestic Natural Gas Resources. Whew, that's a mouthful. So they established this membership. And do you know who the membership includes? Do you remember those previous orders we talked about with all these department heads? The guys who control everything with the stroke of a pen of Janet Neapolitano? Well, guess what? It's the same group. Holy moly. The Department of Defense, the Department of Interior, the Department of Agriculture, Commerce, Health and Human Services. Say what? Department of Transportation, Energy, Homeland Security, Environmental Protection Agency. Oh, I really want them deciding whether a gas deal is good or not. The Council on Environmental Quality. Whew, that's another forward-thinking group. The Office on Science and Technology Policy. I didn't even know we had one of them. The Office of Management and Budget. Nobody listens to them anyway. And the National Economic Council. Oh, you mean all those guys who sit up there and ship jobs to China and get tax breaks and get government support and then make big campaign contributions? You mean like Jeffrey Immelt from GE? Those guys? Great. I feel much better now. Let's keep going on this wonderful executive order that I know you haven't heard about, that the press hasn't reported on, that controls basically the greatest ace in the hole this country has, which is its energy resources. This group can, number one, consistent with the authorities and responsibilities of participating agencies and offices. You mean we didn't name them all? You mean there's more? Oh, my. The working group, Oh, the working group. That's an oxymoron. Shall support the safe and responsible production of domestic unconventional natural gas by performing the following functions. Coordinate agency policy activities, ensuring their efficient and effective operation and facilitation cooperation among, you know, there's so many, you can't even read this stuff. Number two, coordinate among agencies, the sharing of scientific, environmental, and related technical and economic information. Number three, engage in long-term planning. They're going to engage in long-term planning? We haven't had an energy policy since this guy took office. But he signs an executive order about long-term planning on taking over the energy resources of the United States? Oh, my. Right on the heels of signing an executive order saying that basically, the government will control all energy by a stroke of Janet Napolitano's pen. This is kind of frightening. I mean, I don't know how this is all affecting you folks. And I think you know what my opinion is. And I think you can hear the sarcasm in my voice because I really can't contain myself. I'm going to give you my opinion. Right now, I'm just giving you facts. I am reading from the actual documents that bear Barry's signature. These are real live deals, folks. This is not some pie in the sky. This is not Chicken Little saying the sky may fall. This is the friggin' sky in your coffee. Let me continue. I'm getting steamed up now. We might have to take a break. Engage in long-term planning and ensure coordination among the appropriate who figures that one out? Federal entities with respect to such issues as research, natural resource assessment, and the development of infrastructure. Oh, so they're going to kind of get in the middle of drilling pipelines, etc. That's infrastructure in energy parlance. And they're going to promote interagency communication with stakeholders. You know, that means that dirty private sector that's developing this unbelievable resource. How dare they do that without the government control? Oh, and they're going to consult with other agencies and offices as appropriate. I don't even want to think of what that... I guess they're going to go up to Cass Sunstein's office and say, hey, can you rattle off a 5,000-page regulation so we can just kind of run 100% of this show, please? Anyway... To go down the line, the bottom line is that this is a grab at and an attempt to circumvent the fact that gas and oil exploration are down 70% of federal lands, another lie of Obama's, by the way, a lie by omission. When he tells you production is up, yes, production is up, wow, it really is amazingly up on private lands and state lands. It's down 70% on federal lands since he took office. And we all know that because we've gone over this on previous shows, it takes a long time to bring a well from idea, research, investigation, drilling, pipeline, transport, transmission to the pump. We're talking anywhere from 3 to 7 years on each well. It's a long time, folks. And, you know, I don't think that 3 years ago, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, Barack Obama was president. I think that was George Bush. He had his own problems, but not developing our energy resources was not one of them. So, that's a pretty scary executive order, I think, because... you can't run the society without energy, can you? And you can't function without water or food, can you? And you probably won't live too long without some type of health care, can you? Do you kind of see the drift here? Control of the basic services that are needed for life and economy is what's included in all of these executive orders. And in the Heritage Act, which has been enhanced by executive orders, starting with Bill Clinton, we talked about that last week, they can actually grab the land. I mean, never mind the food, the water, the tractors, the energy, you name it, your doctor, you, they can grab you, they can now grab the land. I mean, there's really, there's not a lot left, is there? Yes, there is. There's guns, but they want to grab those too. That's our upcoming show. Okay, so this brings us to the Law of the Sea executive order. You know, the Law of the Sea is basically a globalist dream. This is where the United States cedes its territorial rights to certain waters that surround its shores. Remember, we have, I believe it's a 1,500-mile or more coastline on the Gulf, a almost 3,000-mile coastline on the East Coast, and an almost 3,000-mile coastline on the West Coast. So, we're talking about, and that's not counting Alaska, which has, I think it's 7,000 miles, if you count the Aleutians, of coastline. So we're talking about 20,000 miles of coastline. You know, there's a lot of countries that would kill to have 100 miles of coastline. And we got 20,000 miles of it. These guys want to give it away. You know, countries get to own, they get to control by international treaty up to 12 miles from their coastline. That's kind of considered their waters. And then there's other zones, et cetera, et cetera. And then there's the high seas. I won't bore you with those. But what this deal does is it cedes a large portion, in some cases all, of that 12 miles to international, spell that UN, our friends at the UN again. They are consistent, those globalists, aren't they? It cedes to the UN control of all those waters, which just happens to include also, of course, fishing, energy, you know, recreation, you name it. This has been voted down in Congress. It's kind of like cap and trade. So they're trying the end run through an international treaty, if you will, coupled with an executive order, because, you know, Congress is supposed to approve treaties. But Barry thinks that maybe with an executive order and a spineless Congress, maybe he can just ram it through and usurp more power. But this is a little bit scarier than you think, because this whole deal was funded originally by George Soros. George Soros, by the way, there's some recent numbers out. It was a very good report. In the last 10 years, he has given $900 million. That's almost $1 billion, folks. That's a lot of dough. $400 million to academic places so that they teach what he wants taught. And on top of that, almost $500 million to candidates and causes, either directly or indirectly through his Tides Foundation, Center for American Progress, you know, the whole nine yards. Well, this is the guy who originally kind of funded the Joint Ocean Commission Initiative Leadership Council. They really do like those long names, don't they? And this is kind of a huge step towards one world government. This is a dream of the globalists. Okay. What it does is it outright gives away parts of the oceans controlled now by the United States. It's a giant step toward globalism. It gives the United Nations more power over the United States, even as we pay the lion's share of their bills. It's a huge overreach by the federal government. I've been giving examples of it here. And our Congress doesn't seem to want to go, you know, open up a can of whoop-ass here, so I don't know what's going to happen with that. And on top of all this, it subjugates certain parts of the military, like our Navy, to international control, because the Navy, if it's not defending our waters, therefore has an international purpose. We're going to talk about that three or four shows from now, what's happening to our military and Obama and minions vesting of military control in foreign hands. You're not going to like those facts. I've been researching that for a couple months, too. Now, the Joint Ocean Commission Initiative Leadership Council is comprised of John Podesta. He's the former co-chairman of the Obama Presidential Transition Team. I just love these coincidences. Okay. He's also the CEO of the Center for American Progress. They advise Obama on various policies, and they're funded entirely, just about entirely, by George Soros. Hey, George, here you are again. And here's the objective. This is a quote. An America whose stewardship ensures that the ocean, our coasts, and the Great Lakes are healthy and resilient, safe and productive, and understood and treasured so as to promote the well-being, prosperity, and security of present and future generations. Here's what they forgot to add. That's present and future generations of all the people in all the countries across the world, not just Americans. And all you have to do is read a little further in this deal. What this deal is called, by the way, is a National Ocean Policy. The National Ocean Policy is a result of the Interagency Ocean Policy Task Force. That was created by an Obama executive order in 2010. Don't you like the way these guys just kind of nibble away at this progressive thing? They're really very good, you know. I've heard over the last week about how stupid he is and, you know, what a mistake it is and the wheels are coming off his campaign. Look. This guy is not stupid. The people who are behind him are not stupid. They are deadly enemies. They are brilliant. They almost have this done, folks. They almost have this plan completed, which is what's leading them to a desperation, which, well, I'm about to offer my opinion, so I won't. I'm going to wait till the end, just like I promised. Anyway. The National Ocean Policy is a result of the Interagency Ocean Policy Task Force created by that 2010 order. And they have a 78-page report out there which basically says that it's important to vest international control in the oceans because of global warming. It's amazing how all this stuff ties in. The report proposes that the United States join the United Nations Law of the Sea Convention. The Law of the Sea Convention is a legal instrument which would govern activities under, over, and on the world's oceans. Just like we've been talking, and just like this kind of executive order that's coming down the pike says. Okay, its purpose is to accelerate the pace of change, this quote, accelerate the pace of change that results in meaningful ocean policy reform. And the mission of this convention is to, quote, work together to build the political will in the United States, and now I'm off the quote, to reach this worldwide vision. Do you know who kind of ran this deal and who's really behind it? I mean, spent a lot of time on it. Deals that are funded by George Soros, an avowed enemy of the United States, Israel, capitalism, you name it. Leon Podesta. And Leon Panetta. He's our current Secretary of Defense. He was our previous Director of the CIA. He was also, you're going to just love this, the co-chairman for the Joint Ocean Commission Initiative, which is a partner of Citizens for Global Solutions. It's called CGS. CGS is a strong supporter of the World Federalist Movement. That means one world government. The CGS is considered by the World Federalist Movement, according to their own papers, to be its branch in the United States. You know, their branch office. No ATM, but it's their branch office. And they happen to be headquartered just a few blocks from the United Nations headquarters in New York. Wow. It must have been a cheap lease. You know how inexpensive that Manhattan real estate is. Well, anyway. By the way, they're also close to the criminal court. For you know, the International Criminal Court down there. Oh, well. It's kind of scary. Now, this executive order has not been signed yet. It's being drafted. I think Obama is running into enough headwinds in his shall we say, campaign for re-election that perhaps he has slowed down on its drafting and execution. But you need to know it's out there, and you need to let your representatives know it's out there, because that executive order or this treaty or any policy adopted by any branch of this government which supports it is not good for America, not good for Americans, and not good for maintaining and preserving our constitutional republic. That brings us to the folks who have courageously kind of fought this deal. And we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, I'm going to tell you about those folks and tell you what you can do to help. And then we're going to get into some of the ugliness happening over in Europe, how that ties into the campaign, how the campaign ties into Mr. Obama's lies and desperation, why that desperation is very dangerous based on my last three shows, these executive orders, the National Defense Preparedness Act, the whole nine yards. And then we're going to finish up, as I promised, with a contrarian viewpoint, which says we're headed for deflation, not inflation. And finally, five little thinking tidbits, if you will, which I know you'll enjoy. Be right back.
Critics rave about the Threads West and American Saga series. Read Lance Rosenthal's number one bestseller, comparing it to Lonesome Dove, to Centennial, and even to Gone with the Wind. The Threads West series begins in 1855 and unfolds the riveting, sensual, adventure-filled tale of a country on the cusp of greatness. Fueled with passion, each thrilling adventure-packed novel follows lives woven into multi-generational tapestries of lust, duplicity, enmity, love, and triumph. Threads West and Maps of Fate, both number one bestsellers, are available at Barnes & Noble, Hastings, Amazon.com, and BarnesandNoble.com. Read the romance of the West, the story of America, her people, and her spirit. Go to ThreadsWestSeries.com. That's ThreadsWestSeries.com. Get them both today.
This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the right side, broadcasting to you at a KGAB AM 650 on your dial and its affiliates, Cheyenne, Wyoming, and the EBN Network, WebTalkRadio.net. By the way, you can go to WebTalkRadio.net, type in my name, Reed Lance Rosenthal, or the name of the show on the right side, and see all the archives, past shows that we've been talking about. Now, there are some people who are standing up against these executive orders. There's 37 members of Congress who have signed letters, etc., putting together a bill. They're led by Sandy Adams, a rather courageous gal who's a Republican from Orlando, Florida. And there's a federal judge who struck down the most onerous provisions of the NDA, you know, the ones where you just kind of disappear. You don't get to make your phone call. And if you think about it, by the way, that federal judge's name is Catherine Forrest. That's two R's, Forrest, U.S. Eastern District in New York. She ruled that that portion of the NDA which allowed the government to simply spirit you away was facially unconstitutional, and she enjoined it from going forward. However, remember this. The executive orders that we've been going over were signed after the law was passed, which was December of 2011. Thank you, Barry. They were signed after that, before this judge's ruling. I fully expect an end run to try and reinstitute the "we can make you disappear and you don't have any rights" part of this law that this judge struck down. Because otherwise, some of these executive orders are diluted. There's no sense having internment camps for displaced civilians if you can't displace them. So, just kind of bear that in mind. Keep your nose to the wind. Now, what you can do to help is find out, go to this Congress lady's website and take a look at what she's doing. She has some good stuff on it. And support Miss Adams' group, if you will. Let your representatives know and make sure that they're supporting the group. And if they're not supporting the group, and fiscal sanity and a whole bunch of other things, make sure they don't get elected in November. Talk to your friends and let them know what's going on here. Now let's get into the last part, because we're kind of running out of time, which I always seem to do. Okay, So, Western Europe. You probably heard, or maybe you hadn't, but Spain got a $124 billion bailout to save its banks. You know, we talked about this. We talked about this months ago. Here it is. Of course, the Obama administration and Tim Geithner, tax cheat Tim, is applauding this because anything they can do to take this wreck, which is going to occur, in fact, it's already occurred, to take this wreck and push it past the election is good. And that ties into the next thing. And the next thing is that they're getting a little desperate. You know, Woodrow Wilson set this progressive, spelled communist, thing in motion 100 years ago. And they are so close to taking us down as a constitutional republic. They are so close to accomplishing their plan with their little shadow governments that they've set up, this bureaucracy, these executive orders, this undermining of the Constitution, faith, family. They're really close, and they're desperate that they're going to lose it. And that's why Barry, baby, is going on a rampage of lying. A rampage of lying. You know, he has told us that there were, I believe, several million green jobs created through his programs. We find out, of course, in the last few weeks that this includes garbage men. It includes people who work in bicycle shops, and I can give you a long list, but they're all that ludicrous. Here's the real numbers. The money that he has spent, the tens and tens and tens of billions of dollars on alternative energy, have created approximately 3,500, that's 3,500 jobs, at a cost of $11 million each. By the way, his claim that he's created 4.3 million jobs, which for some reason the press doesn't want to pick up on. Folks, if you go back and look at the numbers, he's discounting 2009. Do you know how many jobs this president has created since the day he took office? 55,000. 55,000. That's 55,000. Not 4.3 million. He's excluding the 4.2 million jobs that were lost in the 14 to 16 months since he took office. How convenient. And the press isn't calling him out on this. And then, of course, he's telling us how we need to spend more money, that do-nothing Congress. You know, those Congress people who have 30 bills sitting in the Senate that Harry Reid won't bring up. Three budget bills, no budgets for the last 3 years. Let me suggest that if printing money was the panacea to our ills, Russia would still exist and Greece would be a superpower. I mean, them's the facts, Jack. Now, we can go on with Barry's lies, but the bottom line is he's getting desperate. Even some of the mainstream liberal press is talking about it only because they're complaining and whining because they think they might lose the election. Another one is federal spending since I took office. This is a quote from Barry. Federal spending since I took office has risen at the slowest pace of any president in almost 60 years. Now, look, guys and gals, you can't add $5 trillion in debt more than any president. Putting them all together since George Washington has raised the deficit and not have increased spending more than everybody else. You know how he came up with those numbers? He came up with those numbers by excluding TARP. When the TARP paid back money, he used that as deficit reduction. I won't get into all the details. We're going to go into it a little bit next week because the math is unbelievable. The bottom line is, the spending increases are 9% and 11% respectively for 2010 and 2011. He's averaged 3%. That's double the rate of all the other presidents combined. So, what can you say? You know, when you're going to lie, you at least have to lie with some believability, but he's over the deep end. Which brings us to the next thing. And this is David Goldman. We talked about this. I want to talk about it a little bit more next week because we're going to run out of time, but I do want to alert you to the fact that there are some economists out there, including Goldman, who's, you know, he's pretty good. And in an interview on the CNBC's Kudlow Report, he talked about how the collapse of Europe, if Spain implodes, and by the way, This is before that $124 billion loan last week. Spain has imploded. It's not if it's going to, it has. That this could really trigger deflation rather than inflation is something that I really do want to talk about a little bit next week in the next segments, because you need to be aware of kind of all the different opinions out there. Because there's a different set of protections you implement for deflation versus inflation. And then we're going to end the show very quickly, as I promised, with five things which will make you grin, because they are just as true. They are as true as Barry's pronouncements are untrue. Number one, you cannot legislate the poor into prosperity by legislating the wealthy out of prosperity. Number two, what one person receives without working for, another person must work for without receiving. Number three, the government cannot give to anybody anything the government does not first take from somebody else. Number four, you cannot multiply wealth by dividing it. And number five, when half of the people get the idea they do not have to work because the other half is going to take care of them. And when the other half gets the idea that it does no good to work because somebody else is going to get what they work for, that is the beginning of the end of any nation. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side. Have a great Saturday. Have a great weekend. Keep your nose to the wind, your eyes wide open. I'll see you next week.
For more information about Reed and his work, please click on the globe in front of you on the WebTalkRadio.net page. You can also click on the first two volumes of his number one best-selling historical Western series, Threads West, An American Saga, and the newly released second book, Maps of Fate. And on June 26th, the first volume of his new nonfiction book, Land, for Love and Money, will be available everywhere. Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archives on Reed's WebTalkRadio.net page, and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.